ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Nick Westergaard, a strategist, speaker, educator, and author of Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Business, Big and Small. As chief brand strategist at Brand Driven Digital, he helps build better brands online through social media and digital marketing for everyone from small businesses to Fortune 500 companies to the President's Jobs Council. In addition to posting insights on branding and marketing on his popular blog at branddrivendigital.com, he's a contributor to the Harvard Business Review, a regular columnist for the Gazette, and host of the popular On Brand podcast. His thoughts have also been featured in news sources such as U.S. News and World Report, Entrepreneur, Forbes, Matchable, and more.
Hi, Nick. Thanks so much for being on the program. You're the chief brand strategist for Brand Driven Digital. Tell us a little bit about your company.
We are a brand-focused digital marketing firm, as the name would suggest, and we help organizations of all shapes and sizes build better brands online. And we do that through consulting, through coaching, and I also do a lot of speaking and writing about this very topic. And I also teach branding and marketing at the University of Iowa. So I was a guest on a podcast recently, and someone called me the Indiana Jones of digital marketing. So I'm comfortable with that moniker, as it seems to describe my days pretty well.
So I was going to say, so you're not very busy. You have a lot of free time, clearly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just need to get one of those little maps that I can move the little red line in the airplane across.
Exactly. You wrote an article on for Harvard Business Review about content marketing. And in the article, you said, although we are producing more content than ever, fewer marketers have a documented content marketing strategy compared with last year. And so I have a question for you. If they don't have a strategy, what on earth is going on? Is it simply spray and pray? And what's behind the trend?
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer is I think that's exactly what's behind it. You know, we're encountering all of these headlines, all of these articles, content is king, you know, more content, all of these different new and exciting content formats. And that's great. But I think that too many of us are seeing those headlines saying, okay, yep, we're going to do all of that. And instead of coming up with a plan for why it is that we're actually doing this, we're instead bringing over kind of the same lazy strategic structures that we've used in other media formats before. The spray and pray, the more is better. We're just going to get this in front of as many people as possible. And it doesn't matter if everybody else is doing the exact same thing. So that's kind of my caution, is to throw out that stat from the Content Marketing Institute about how we're creating more content than ever before, but we're increasingly flying blind on all of that content. So if you leave an article of mine that you're reading or a talk that I'm giving, what I try to say is my one thing that I could leave you with is that more isn't always better. Sometimes more is just more. So focus on, you know, something that makes sense for who you are and who you're talking to and the context of where this conversation is happening. And that context, from an industry standpoint as well, it may very well be that there's this clear need for the people that you're trying to talk to. But if it's being met by 10 other competitors in a very similar way, then I don't know that you need to rush and commit resources to create Me Too content.
Right. So it's relevant. And it's also differentiation. But why is it important to document the strategy? What is it in the documentation that is important?
That's a great question, because, you know, I think that I think our eyes go to the strategy side of that stat from the Content Marketing Institute. But I've talked with Joe Polizzi at the Content Marketing Institute, Nan Handley from Marketing Profs, who partner on that study every year. And I've asked that very question about, you know, why does documentation matter? And it is that level of commitment, because a lot of times you can say, yeah, I know what we're doing. we're doing X. And it sounds like a small thing to say, yeah, but it's not written down anywhere. There's not a strategy, a document that you can point to. And a lot of times it's easy to say, okay, that's a thing that's up on the shelf next to the crisis plan. You know, why do I need to put it into a three-ring binder? That's going to be all these time, people, resources, everything else. We know what we're doing. And a lot of times it can be nebulous. It can be nonspecific and really easy to kind of shoehorn into whatever it is that you're doing instead of something that you've put a little bit of thought, a little bit of foresight into so that you do know why you're doing this, what it is that you're doing, who this involves, and a lot of the other answers to some of those key strategic questions.
Right. Are there other ways where conventional wisdom about content marketing is wrong?
Well, I think that that's one of the biggest dynamics of, and they're all kind of related. It's kind of the same thing different ways. So a lack of a strategy, which leads you to doing sometimes more than you have to. Back to that, more isn't always better. Sometimes more is just more. But also, if you're nonspecific and aren't sure exactly why you're doing this, again, if you've failed to eat those strategic vegetables, then a lot of times what you're doing is a lot less specific than it could be. And a great example of how that manifests itself as a very specific symptom is that's where you end up with that Me Too content that I was talking about, that, you know, with a lot of marketers, especially in, you know, B2B space in a lot of different categories, you could, you know, kind of hold your hand up over the logo for this company's specific branded content, and it could be anybody's. So I think that if you know why you're doing this, you can focus on what you're doing in a better way than you might be able to if you are just saying, yep, we need a podcast. We're doing that for this reason.
Right.
And you've got kind of all of these, you know, because that was the thing for a while. Everybody has a podcast and everybody's talking to all of the same people, having the same conversations. And, you know, you don't know exactly why it is that you're doing this and who the listener is too.
Right. How is it useful to them? What does it answer for them? Why is the conversation flowing the way it is? Going to, you know, the plethora of content which is out there, and are consumers overwhelmed by content? And if so, what else do you do? What else is a marketer to do in an increasingly packed universe of content where people are becoming more selective, I would argue?
Well, there's another stat out there which I don't have quite as handy. I think it's from Gallup or Nielsen, one of the very big provider of statistical funnery, has noted how much of all of that content. I mean, that's maybe even the saddest part of it, is the percentage of waste in the content marketing business, is that we're all creating all of this content. And there's some horrifyingly sad stat about how much of it in the double digits isn't finding its home, isn't getting used. I know. And you know, I'm sure that there's folks listening that are thinking, oh my God, I think it sounds horrifying. It sounds depressing. And the third and saddest part of that is it sounds right. It's a huge problem. So what can we do about it? Well, I sound like a broken record, but we can go back through those steps and get more focused and come up with a documented strategy. I don't mean to pivot back to the last question, but I think there is some danger in a documented content strategy. That sounds, that's all kinds of unfun.
Because yes.
I mean, not only because we have to commit to something, but just the process. We're going to have to, you know, it's every other Tuesday, all afternoon with all of our department heads, and we're all going to meet. We're going to put that binder together. And I don't think that that's necessary. I think that's why so many cringe at the idea of a documented content strategy. I don't think it has to be that complex. I mean, I've repeated just in kind of making the laps on this topic, I've repeated some of the big key points that I think need to be in a content strategy. I think one of my favorite marketers that I point to is Rudyard Kipling, or as I always joke when I put his picture up there during a keynote, I always say, Rudyard, why am I in a marketing talk, Kipling? Because beyond, you know, being known for the Jungle Book, he had a really simple poem that said, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. So anybody with a journalism background knows that by answering those five W's and one H, who, what, when, where, how, and why, by answering those, you can get a lot closer to where you need to be with having a documented strategy. So to quickly unpack that, to answer why, the business objective behind why you're doing this, that is going to tell you a bit more about what it is you should be doing and also who you're serving. And if you know why, what, and who, you have a better idea on what works best in terms of channel and when. So kind of some of the biggest questions out there as we look at all of these different channels, as so many of us fall into the trap of checklist marketing, doing all of the things, not because we have to, but because we don't know what it is that we should be doing and when. But with some of those questions answered, we can have a better way ahead of having some insights so that we don't fall into some of those traps. So that's why I'm quick to point out that that documented content strategy doesn't have to be a great big heavy binder with tab dividers that sits on the shelf next to the crisis plan and feels very unusable. I think a scrappy content strategy can be something that answers those 5 to 6 questions and, it might need to be more fleshed out for some very specific parts of that. But I think a scrappy content strategy can be something that might just be a one page summary that answers some of those key questions.
Well, that's a perfect segue because I want to talk to you about your book, Get Scrappy. It seems that you're intentional in using the word scrappy in the title. And certainly it's come up in our conversation. So how you want to speak a little bit about your book?
Absolutely. Well, you know, as I was working with organizations of all shapes and sizes, it did seem like that was a common denominator, some of these same things that everybody's struggling with. I think it's easy. We put ourselves into buckets. We're small business. We're Fortune 500. We're B2B, B2C, education, nonprofit. And I was seeing a lot of those same issues, that, you know, need for strategy, but kind of this bad strategy stereotype out there. And I was also, seeing a lot of these same themes crop up. But when I was talking with the folks at Schwinn Bicycle Company, it's easy to think of them as a great big American brand that, you know, probably has all of the marketing resources that they need. And really, their marketing team is only about 5 to 6 people. Hmm. And in looking at that, I think it'd be easy for someone to think, oh, they got it all figured out. And when I was talking with the folks about kind of a better path and some of these different ideas and even kind of playing with this term of scrappy marketing, Samantha Herschel, who is their digital marketing manager, was nodding along to what I was saying. And she said, you know what, that's so true, because we could all use a few people and a few dollars more. And for me, that's the definition of the scrappy marketer, that beyond industry, sector stereotypes, really cuts across all that, because I don't think there's any of us out there that are working with all of the marketing budget that we wish for or all of the people that we're wishing for. So to quote Samantha, which I do in the book, we could all use a few people and a few dollars more. And that's what I wanted to write a roadmap for how you could do.
Well, that's so true. And in the book, you also say that most people in your industry understand the why, and that we need to focus on the how. What interesting challenges are you seeing right now as brands look at that how? What's challenging them?
Well, as you know, it's hard enough to plan all of this. We've spent a lot of our time here talking about, but then how does this work get done? And I think there was a point, as we add social networks, as we add forms of content, as we, you know, check all of these somewhat arbitrary items off of this kind of imaginary checklist, well, we must just be adding people for all of that. You know, maybe we did that a little bit in the early days, but then that might have seemed like, okay, at some point we just can't grow the marketing team infinitely. So how can we do more with less? And that impacts our people. It impacts a lot of the content creation frustrations out there. And it also speaks to some of those marketing integration frustrations that we have, where we're looking to do more with less. But as we are doing more, we want to make sure that we're fully leveraging all of the different things that we're doing. So how can we connect what we're doing with social media to what we're doing with content, to what we're doing with our email marketing, to what we're doing with our other broadcast forms of marketing, even with what we're doing offline as well. So how can we connect those digital dots both online and off? So that's kind of what I sought to do in kind of the second half of the book. The first is focus pretty heavily on planning the work, making sure you have that solid foundation in place. But then from there, it's really about working the plan as well.
So, and does that go to the myth of big? Is that what you mean there?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes that kind of also speaks to that point from Schwinn, or that is really kind of the counterpoint to. But I think that there's a lot of folks out there at small businesses, at nonprofits, government agencies even, that think that only big brands with big teams, big tools, big technology can do big things when it comes to digital marketing. And I think that that's really what the myth is, that the Schwinn story is kind of my poster child for debunking, is that I think sometimes we want to separate ourselves. And I tell the story that even in writing this book, that I was, you know, being pushed by my publisher of, okay, this is a small business marketing book. And not that I wouldn't have wanted to write a small business only marketing book. I don't think that does justice to the story that I want to tell. That's, you know, I'm talking with Fortune 500 marketers, right, who seem to be struggling with the, right, same things. And that's not to say that there aren't some specifics that are at play, but some of the most foundational challenges are really shared. So I wanted to make sure that we could break some of that down and get past some of those, oh, big businesses don't grapple with that at all.
Right. Not, well, there's sort of universal pain points, if you will, that everybody is going to be experiencing because it's the nature of the challenge. You know, yes, they may have a larger team, but then they also have a larger complexity that they're trying to wrangle and communicate. You say that technology is moving too quickly for people to be confined by the proven ideas in the industry. So how does that square having a documented content marketing plan? Is there embedded in that a level of flexibility?
Well, I think you have to have some flexibility in there. There is a quote that I cite in the book from John Jantz, who wrote the great, great handbook, Duct Tape Marketing. But he talks about the quote of his that I cite is that your plans aren't the secret, planning is. It's not the physical document you create, it's the process that exists around that at your organization.
Right.
So I do think that there is some implied flexibility. There has to be today. I mean, with as fast as, you know, tools are evolving, technologies evolving, but also as our organizations are as well. So they do have to evolve. But when I talk about, you know, kind of some of the relying on what's happening in your industry, I do think that's where we can get a little uncreative. And we think, okay, well, I need to, you know, as we look at, I say that we're kind of over case studied today because we don't know exactly what to do and we don't always want to develop our own strategy. We wait for a case study from an organization like ours that's in our exact industry, that is, you know, in some place like our exact geographic area, a CEO about the same height and build of ours. So what are they doing? And then we're going to copy that and drop it into our, and I say that and it sounds like, of course, but I know that this is happening. Or we see people saying, oh, well, no one else is in our industry is using Snapchat, so that means it's nothing we should pay attention to. And I don't know that you can arbitrarily apply that in a black and white way. They might not be using Snapchat for a pretty logical reason. But I also think that that's a dangerous, inflexible mindset to get into.
Right. I mean, you can't sort of be slavish to your plan. And how, if you're not going to look at your case studies within your industry, because then you're just going to end up with redundant planning, how should you go about benchmarking or selecting models outside of your industry? Are there guidelines or things that you should look for? What would be a way that somebody could look to find inspiration outside of their particular vertical?
If I haven't beaten all of the listeners to death with
go
this,
ahead, beat them some more.
with all of this strategy, everybody out there saying, we get it, I'll stop listening right now and go make one. But if you know what it is you're trying to do, or rather why you're doing this strategically, then it is easier to see beyond your industry and to say, okay, that idea, you know, maybe we're a B2B marketer and I'm looking at this B2C example that I've heard about, that I've seen in the news that I normally wouldn't look at, but I can look at that and I can say, oh, you know what? They are trying to generate some brand awareness among a specific demographic that isn't unlike ours. So while I might not have looked at them, based on what they're trying to do strategically or what it looks like they're trying to do, that is maybe an idea that we can borrow. Or maybe it comes not on the strategic side, but on the implementation side. You know, I often point to New Belgium Brewing. They have a large following in the craft brewing space, and they manage their Instagram presence in a decidedly scrappy way because it's shared among five different employees. It's a mix of people that are inside, people on different teams internally, but also external people that are out in field sales at events with customers. So the end result, while it seems like that might not be the tidiest of ways of managing a social network, it's actually gives them great variety to their Instagram presence visually, because it's a mix of very carefully manicured new product shots, but also a lot of fans at festivals enjoying their beer. So I bring that up because there's a lot of us, most of us, usually, unless I have not been lucky enough yet to speak to a beer focused event, but most of us aren't in the craft brewing space, but that's an idea that almost all of us could borrow, that way of scrappily, I don't know that right. Scrappily is a word, but we'll go with it, scrappily staffing their Instagram presence.
Right. I think that's very clever. That's interesting. You had also used the phrase market like a mousetrap. What does that
yes,
mean?
Yes, that's one of my favorite definitions of scrappy, because more than scrappy is, because there's a lot of people that want to say, okay, it's just marketing on the cheap.
Yeah.
Or it's dumbing down your marketing, or it's somehow undercutting the quality of what you're doing. And I say market like a mousetrap because a mousetrap is kind of a perfect symbol of scrappiness, because as the saying goes, nobody's ever bothered to invent a better mousetrap. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It is effective. It accomplishes its job. It gets the mouse. And it's also efficient. It doesn't cost more than it has to. So I think that we should all be on the lookout for ways that we can market a bit more like the proverbial mousetrap.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And as we're winding down our interview, I have a little thing that I like to do with folks. It's a bit of a word game. You're ready to play? I'm going to say a word and you just say whatever comes to your mind, top of mind. You ready?
I can do that. Otherwise, I would overthink it.
Okay, good. No thinking aloud, just blurting. Facebook.
Big.
Google.
Uh-huh. Bigger.
I was going to say, what are you going to say for that? Snapchat.
Millennials.
Twitter.
Troubled.
YouTube.
The video's grandparent.
Oh. Ad blockers.
Need to understand. That's multiple words. Am I confined to one word?
No, it's just top
phrase?
Of mind. It's what okay, your phrase
there we
is
go.
Good. Phrase is good.
I think we all need to understand the behavior around them better.
Art.
More of it.
Virtual reality.
Going to be everywhere very soon.
Augmented reality.
It will be everywhere before virtual reality is. I mean, that's Pokemon Go. There's my free
exactly.
Association.
Artificial intelligence.
The joke is Terminator 2, but let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Exactly. And the last thing is, what are you most excited about?
I am most excited about doing better work, smarter work. And I think that that's possible. I think we've talked about a lot of this stuff that, you know, it's easy to just do it. We've always been doing it, but I don't think we have to. We can be smarter with what we're doing and how we're doing it. And the most up with people way that I talk about branding and marketing is that we can do it better and we can hopefully interrupt less and connect with people even more.
Oh, I like that. I like that as a plan. Absolutely. So where can people find out more about you?
The best place to go to learn more about a lot of the scrappy ideas I've been talking about is getscrappybook.com. And the best place for everything else that is all about me is nickwestergaard.com. And that's Westergaard with two A's.
Thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it. It's been great fun talking with you.
Thank you, Gabriella.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped to bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Nunn, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Nick Westergaard. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.